It's a very wet Tuesday afternoon. Good afternoon, and welcome to the Pulse here on Joy News. Joy News, independent, fearless, and credible. Well, this afternoon, the reliability of Ghana's power distribution system is under scrutiny following revelation by the Public Utilities Regulatory Commission that the system-wide outages attributed to transformer overload by the ECG may not be accurate. We have details of investigations by the Regulatory Commission highlighting discrepancies in outage reporting, raising concerns over operational integrity and transparency within ECG's work framework. Also, in this bulletin, Public Utilities Workers Union condemns what they call political interference after an ECG official was arrested for carrying unlawful disconnection at the Kumasi Technical University. We will engage the leadership of the group who alleged the Ashanti Regional Minister masterminded the arrest of the ECG official. And the news just in, former Maslock CEO Sedina Tamakuratianu sentenced to 10 years with hard labor by an Accra High Court. We are live in court for details. And later in the bulletin, we cross over to Berlin to bring you updates on the case that was brought before the International Court of Justice aiming to end Germany's ongoing support for Israel. My name is Elton Brobe. This is The Pulse here on Joy News. We have more on, more on this coming your way in the next an hour and 45 minutes. Stay on. So we've got an update from the court for you because the former Maslock CEO, Sedina Tamaklo, has been sentenced to 10 years in hard labor. The clutch here is that she's out of the country, but she's been out of the country for some years now. So she's been sentenced in absentia. We have details plus reaction from lawyers that represented her in court today and what this means going forward now that she's out of the country and she's been sentenced in absentia. But this time, let's talk about power. Now, yesterday between 10 a.m. and up until this morning, 8 a.m., I had no access to electricity. I slept in darkness. And I guess a lot of you experienced the same situation. Even as we speak, some of you are in darkness. Now, this afternoon, on the pause, the reliability of Ghana's power distribution system is under scrutiny. And this is following revelation by the Public Utilities Regulatory Commission that a system-wide outages attributed to transformer overloads by the ECG may not be accurate. You will recall that the Electricity Company of Ghana attributed disruption in power supply to overloaded transformers. But detailed analysis of transformer data provided by the ECG to PRC revealed that majority of the outages occurring during peak evening hours actually linked to load management operations by Gridco and unrelated force. This discrepancy challenges the ECG's assertion, prompting the PRC to delve deeper into the root causes of these disruptions. And this afternoon, we have a detailed, you know, catalogue of issues that have been brought forth by the PRC. And my colleague Isaac Kofi Ajay joins me in studio to unpack the PRC's findings. Kofi, welcome to the Pulse.
Thank you, Elton.
So, very detailed issues that have been provided by the PRC in reaction to this matter. Let's start with the outages.
So, for the outages, we are talking about, just like you said, the transformers that ECG attributed a number of the power outages to them. And I am reading from the PRC's statement or their findings. On these claims. Now, according to the PRC, out of the 715 transformer details submitted, 31 were loaded less than 70%. So out of the 715, 31 were loaded less than 70%. 595, majority of them, were loaded between 70 and 100%. And 89 were loaded above 100. So these are the ones that you can say transformer overload. Those that were loaded above 100 were 89 out of the 715, transformers that the details that ECG actually presented to the PRC. Now, according to the PRC, the data submitted by ECG was further compared to their total outage data provided by ECG again for the period January to March 18, 2024. Now, these were the findings.
Right.
The commission established that 649 outage incidents occurred between 7 p.m. and 11 p.m. If you are watching us for a moment, you know that this is the period that take our power and then we virtually sleep in darkness. Now, out of the 646 outage incidents, only three were planned outages relating to transformers.
Only three
of them.
And the three, in terms of percentage, that's like 0.something percent.
It's not even up to 1%.
But yet we have been told by the ECG, because they were dealing with over 600 transformers.
Yeah.
That was the reason why we were experiencing the power outages.
But
from the point of PURC, that is inaccurate. That can be described as a lie.
Now, let me quote what the PURC actually says. ECG's attribution of the outages between 7 p.m. and 11 p.m. to transformer overload was therefore not factually accurate. Mm-hmm. So that's how the PRC, terms or actually describe ECG's claim. Mm-hmm. They say it is factually inaccurate.
Does the PRC document point to the reason why we're experiencing power outage within that period, if it wasn't as a result of transformer overload?
Well, so the PRC actually put out some of the plant maintenance, things that they were doing. Mm-hmm. And most of them, they say that most of the, power outages that we have, over 4,000 of them, that ECG said they actually had power outage within the period under review, most of them were not as a result of the transformers, but rather because of the fuel issues we've been facing and the cost and all of those things. But if you look at, based on the PRC's findings on the cash waterfall...
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about, because there appears to be challenging in terms of financial flow to meet the dictates of the cash waterfall mechanism arrangement.
Well, so the ECGs, according to the PRC, so ECGs partially complied with the commission's order for honoring, the obligations under the cash waterfall mechanism. It simply means that ECG was supposed to do a certain responsibility. Mm-hmm. They could not, adhere to all 100% of them. Now, an amount of 446.3 million CDs is to be paid by the ECG for August 2023 to February 2024, however, remains outstanding. So it simply means, the cash waterfall mechanism, they are, let me say, three players.
Right.
So we have ECG. We also have the other stakeholders, the IPPs, and any other domestic power producers. Mm. We also have the finance ministry there. Now, the PRC, according to them, were expecting ECG over this period under review to collect a revenue of, let's say, 8.8 billion Ghana cedis.
In fact, if you go through, it says to meet PRC benchmark collection ratio of 98%, ECG should have collected tariff revenue of approximately 8.8 billion Ghana cedis based on the company's declared sales. To satisfy the temporary measure agreed under the cash waterfall mechanism, ECG was expected to collect 7 billion cedis to be allocated to the sector players along the electricity supply value chain category A and B. However, the total tariff revenue ECG declared to the cash waterfall mechanism to be allocated to both category A and B beneficiary was 4.8 billion Ghana cedis. Of this amount, 466 million to be allocated to category B beneficiary remains unpaid by the ECG.
Very clear. I mean, the first statement that came out, I think somewhere March or February, PRC was very categorical on this, that ECG was not making payment to the category B. We have two categories under the cash waterfall mechanism. The category A guys are the IPPs, the independent power producers. And we seem to be paying those guys, but the category B, which most of them are state-owned enterprises, ECG is not paying these companies.
Right.
But the question is, if you collect revenue of 4.8, almost 4.9 billion Ghana cedis, and you've told PRC that over 400 million cedis is supposed to go to the category B, and since August 2023, you've not honored this obligation, then what is really the situation? Why haven't you been able to pay the category B guys? But you've gone ahead to
collect the money. But remember also that when the managing director of ECG spoke to Advancements on Top Story sometime, I think last month, the explanation he provided was to the effect that he had, clearance from the finance minister to use part of the revenue collected under the cash waterfall mechanism to procure fuel to power the generators so that there will be power supply. Does that answer this, this issue raised by PRC?
I think it gives us some sort of clarity, because according to the same PRC somewhere February or March, they said that the finance ministry is supposed to make some commitment of 200 million Ghana cedis that since August 2023 has not done that. And you heard Dubik Mahama saying that we anticipated that we're going to have shortfalls in fuel, so we had to go ahead to buy the fuel. We reached out to the finance ministry. They said you should go ahead. We'll reimburse you. Till date, I don't know whether the finance ministry has gone ahead to reimburse the ECG, but they say that, or the PRC says that the finance ministry, under the cash waterfall mechanism, is supposed to pay the remaining gap.
Right.
And they've not done that since August 20.
But Kofi, you've been watching this space. I mean, what is the implications of this?
Well, so if we are looking at the implication, let's start from the smallest one.
Right.
Now, in there are sanctions. I mean, sanctions for, you know, the PRC.
For not complying.
Exactly.
Yes.
ECG bosses. Now, it will shock you that ECG has told PRC they have 61 bank accounts, mm-hmm. separate bank accounts. Mm. And according to the
PRC, even though we understand that at a cabinet retreat, the president directed them to maintain just one account.
Yeah.
So that, I mean, monies that come in and go can be tracked, and that there could be revenue assurances here and there. Now, as it came up, ECG is rather operating 61 bank accounts. How many banks do we even have in this country?
We have 23 banks, commercial banks, and ECG has 61 bank accounts. I don't know why, but we are also understanding that this is an IMF condition. It's
right.
A new structural benchmark that Ghana has to meet, mm-hmm. and it's captured in the IMF Article 4 review. And it states categorically that ECG must have one centralized bank account. Mm-hmm. And this account must be, you know, audited every quarter. They are doing this to reduce the collection shortfalls that ECG has been having. And there were timelines for ECG
right.
to meet. You know, bringing all this accounting to one account was supposed to end, you know, they were supposed to complete it by September 2023. Mm-hmm. They've not done that. And then also, the first audits of the centralized account was supposed to happen end of February this year. That has also not been done. Mm-hmm. So it means that ECG has breached an IMF structural benchmark that was supposed to be done end of February 2024.
Right.
Not been able to do that.
Clear violation. But there are issues that PRC demanded ECG to provide. And according to this communication from PRC, ECG failed to do so. One of them is that ECG should provide evidence of publication. They've done that. They said load management timetable mm-hmm. corresponding with the timelines and duration for each transformer injection. ECG has not complied with this. No document whatsoever was submitted to the PRC.
I mean, if you listen to the PRC, the statement, it is stated in there that ECG told them they did over 4,000 power outages
exactly.
in the period under review. Now, out of that 4,000, ECG submitted document to justify some of them or to say that we sent notifications around. PRC is saying that most of these documents were actually, I think about just 160 out of 4,000. Now, if you strike an average, it means that within the time under review, the number of power outages a day mm-hmm. was around 40.
Exactly.
And that's so scary that, I mean, ECG is now admitting that there were over 4,000 power outages. And then also the fact that if you read the PRC statement, there is the fact that ECG has not been able to comply with the power outage timetable.
Right, they've not. But they are even yet to submit or to respond to this.
And ECG gave a clear indication why maybe they could not do that because they say, I mean, they were partially blaming GridCo as well, saying that instead of GridCo telling us that, you know, plan load shedding within a very significant period, GridCo waits, you know, 30 minutes to time or 2 hours or an hour. In fact, there were some points where they said that sometimes GridCo will even tell them that they are fine. And then when they are about to just go out, then GridCo will tell them that, oh, we have to shed this number of load. And that makes them to actually carry out the power outages without giving public the public, you know, the prior notice.
But then if we also check, there's a part relating to this particular, you know, demand that they've met, even though PRC is yet to review the document. The volume of load curtailed for each power outage incident, the energy not served, a number of customers affected, segregated into various customer categories, and they've complied.
Mm-hmm.
But PRC says that they are yet to review this document. You know, ECG, PRC is just not taking this line.
Yeah.
And they've taken certain actions. And the demand is that ECG and people who have been identified comply with it. Can you walk us through the punishment regime?
Well, let me start with the smallest, which is the failure to comply with the bank statement, the merger. So according to PRC, the failure to submit details of all bank statements account to the commission by the stated date, the commission hereby imposes an initial regulatory charge of 3,000 penalty units on ECG in accordance with regulation 45 of the LI 2413, amounting to 36,000 Ghana cedis. So ECG's failure to provide the monthly bank statement has actually caused a fine of 36,000 Ghana cedis. Now let's go to the most significant one, which is the Doomsday notification, right, or the notification and publication on plan outages. Now, before PRC dished out this punishment, in fact, they were anticipating or they were contemplating whether they should put this charge on ECG as a company. But they realized that if they do that, then it's simply going to affect ECG's revenue, because already they are not even able to collect enough to pay all the stakeholders in the cash waterfall mechanism. So they have decided to place a fine of almost 5.9 billion Ghana cedis, million Ghana cedis, on the board members of the ECG, and they've given them a timeline to actually comply with, which is 30th May 2024. And in fact, they want them to pay this money into the joint Ministry of Energy and Finance Ministry, account on the fuel account. So go and pay that money into the fuel account, which is held jointly by the Ministry of Energy and the Finance Ministry. They looked at ECG and they realized if they put the fine on them as a company, it will be very difficult for them to maneuver around in terms of complying with the cash waterfall mechanism. So they decided to put the fine rather on board members who served. I think there's a period that they stated that there's board members who served within a certain period ECG did not comply with this directive. And so the fine is almost 5.9.
To be shared among the board members, including the managing director of the ECG. Do we have a response from the ECG?
Well, and we don't have a response now from the ECG, but we know that the PRC has given them deadlines for them to provide them to details.
It's very interesting that this has come at a time where the ECG MD is out of town. It's not at the moment. Government abrogated the government PDS contracts, and PDS felt the abrogation was unlawful, so they took the matter to court. So there's an arbitration going on in London right now. And my information is that the MD of ECG is already in London, together with lawyers, trying to see if they can resolve this matter once and for all. But this is clearly the first time PUC is coming so hard on a utility provider. Gridco is a key part. It's even interesting that they've been left out of this discussion.
Finance Ministry have all been left out. In fact, if you are talking about direct supervision, then Gridco should also be pulled into this whole equation, because it's not just ECG. So what is PRC also doing about ECG? And then also the Finance Ministry that is supposed to perform a certain role under the cash waterfall mechanism, but has not done that since August 2023.
Right.
Why has all the blame been pushed on ECG? Is it because they are the ones collecting the revenue and they are supposed to even pay other sector players? And so we need to find a 360 view of this whole thing. And I know that they are beginning to analyze some of the data that ECG has provided to them, and some interesting findings will come out soon.
Kofi, thank you very much for coming through. And in fact, this is what the PRC, this is what they've put out. They're making some demand. In fact, the amount of money involved, it's almost 6 million Ghana cedis. This is a fine imposed on the board of directors of the ECG. The only person who is out of this cage is the current board chair of ECG, Herbert Krapa, because he came in at the time the damage had been done. And so the managing director and the other board members, they are supposed to pay this from their pocket, almost 6 million Ghana cedis, for failing to provide some information that the PRC required from them. We'll come to explore the ramifications of this and whether or not the PRC has taken a giant step when we speak to a member of the Energy Committee of Parliament, Edward Bauer, and of course, we'll also speak to the ECG Workers Union, because they also have a concern regarding this matter, plus other issues, when we return from this short break. So we'll come back to deal with the energy issue because it's very important. It affects you. But for now, let me also bring you this breaking story that came in some few minutes ago. And former Maslock CEO Sedina Tamaklo Atianu has been sentenced to 10 years in prison with hard labor by an Accra High Court. Head of our legal affairs desk, Richard Kwejonyakon, was in court and joins me with details of what transpired in court. So Richard, finally, there is final issue on this matter.
Yes.
How did it go?
Well, so you may say that there is finality, but I mean, we have not concluded the matter because Sedina Atiunu was tried in absentia. Mm-hmm. She was given all the opportunity that the state had to give him, mm-hmm. Give her to stand trial. But somewhere along the trial, after the cross-examination, she sought permission to travel for medical examination.
In the United States.
Exactly. Only for her not to return. And so the state had to inquire, did numerous inquiries, but still had to go on with the prosecution of the case. And today, finality has been brought to the matter. I say that we do not have a clear-cut finality because today...
In terms of how she will get to serve the sentence.
Exactly, because she's been, even though she's been jailed 10 years, and not only 10 years, but you see, some of the... counts, she was jailed 5 years, 2 years, but concurrently, we picked the highest of it, and so she's going in for 10 years. The other, the head of operations at Maslock at the time, Daniel Azim, who was also sick, but today he managed to be in court and was also sentenced to 2 years.
2 years imprisonment.
Imprisonment.
Okay, so give us the background to this, and then we'll also come to talk about the role the other corporate played. Okay. In this whole enterprise.
So you know Maslock, I mean, what they do, the operations they have been in this country.
They grant loans to small businesses.
Exactly. So in 2017, the Economic and Organized Crime Unit decided to investigate Maslock over some mismanagement and appropriation of state funds. And so it led them to some startling revelations, including the Kantamanto fire, disaster victims. They were supposed to be given money by Maslock, but it turned out that there was nothing like that. The Maslock also claimed that they organized sensitization workshop across the country. Mm-hmm. And it turned out that nothing of that sort happened. They also contracted some auto companies to provide vehicles, buses to GPRTU, but it also turned out that the buses that they contracted, even the prevailing market price, were far lower than what Maslock was giving them. And so, based on that, GPRTU rejected that kind of offer. Mm. There was also another purchase of 350 vehicles without due procedure and other infractions, procurement infractions as well. So, let me run by you some of the things that happened.
Right.
So, this microfinance in the Ashanti region is located at Ijua. In fact, they gave, Maslock said that they were giving them 500,000. But when they gave them...
500,000 to distribute to beneficiaries?
Exactly.
Okay.
So when they gave them that amount of money, they later went back to them to say that the interest was 4%, when the prevailing market rate was around 1.5%, 2%. And so the company rejected that. Now, controversy arose as to who the refund of that money was paid to. Mm. In fact, there were signatures. So, in court, Sedina Atiunu said that, well, the signatures of the receipt of that money looked like hers, but it wasn't authorized by her. Mm-hmm. And so, that was what the court had to deal with. But later on, the prosecution was able to prove that, indeed, she was a recipient of that money. And so, he came to... the sensitization workshop that they claim they organized throughout the country. It turned out that there were millions of Ghana cedis that were pumped into that. They accessed that funds. Mm. But there was no sensitization workshop that was organized across the country.
There was no pictures, evidence of that.
No pictures, no media reports. Even their regional offices, they could not even confirm such event even took place. Mm. And so about 2 million Ghana cedis were taken from the state. Then we go to...
Possibly for education purpose.
Exactly.
But was never done.
Exactly. So the judge indicated that it's intriguing that you organize such sensitization workshop across the country and yet you couldn't tender into evidence pictures, media reports, or anything that will even support what your claim is. And so that was it with that one. And then we come to the Kantamanto fire disaster.
Right.
In fact, some monies were supposed to be given to the people that suffered the fire.
Mm-hmm.
And it turned out that no single person, no single market woman was given that amount of money. In fact, in court, the prosecution proved it case that nothing, not even one CD or a penny was given to anybody. But that money was taken from the state by the accused persons.
To be given to victims of the fire.
Exactly. Exactly. And then we come to willfully causing financial loss to the state with regards to the 350 vehicles that were procured. In fact, when the prosecution put out its case, it came into conclusion that, in fact, these vehicles that were procured, mm-hmm. what was on the market, sometimes the price was even about half. So they could even individually purchase that same vehicle from the same company at a lesser price than buying all the 350 vehicles in bulk. So one would wonder that if you are accessing these cars from a wholesale, and then the wholesale turns out to be far expensive than a retail when an individual goes to purchase from the same company. And so that the court deemed that it was causing financial loss to the state. And then there was also the procurement of 500 Samsung smartphones. And these smartphones, on the market, it was sold at 120 Ghana cedis. But the Maslock said that such phones cost 400 Ghana cedis.
And these phones were meant for who?
For the beneficiary. I don't know, I mean,
what they were going to use it for.
What they were going to use it for. So it turns out that the inflated the prices of all the items that they went to do. Exactly.
Procure.
And all of these things, they were sole sourcing and single sourcing without regard to due procedure or the process outlined by the public procurement authority. And so, judging all of these things in totality, they came to the conclusion that, in fact, these two people, and then let's come to the second accused person, Daniel Axim, who is the head of operations. Mm-hmm. In fact, he managed to raise some 23 memos, but his role in all of that was that he initially was not part of this deal.
Right.
But later on, he became part, and he benefited from 20,000 Ghana cedis.
20,000 Ghana cedis. That's how much money he benefited
exactly.
from all this enterprise. And exactly. The reason why he's 72
so
years.
So he said that he received it as a gift.
From who?
From the first accused.
Okay.
So the courts indicated that someone who is knowledgeable, who is a professional, and who has been empowered with the duty to ensure that some due diligence ought to be done, you don't sit down and be signing checks for the first accused person, that is the former CEO of Maslock, to be siphoning the money from that. So for that negligence on his part, he is going in for 2 years.
2 years.
And then with some amount of money, and so he has about 1,500 penalty units to pay as well. But for Sedna Matsyonu, the penalty unit was 6,500. If you calculate it, if you multiply it by a penalty unit that is 12, it amounts to 78,000 Ghana cedis. That is not all.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, the court has ordered that the state should go after the properties of Sedna Matsyonu, the property that are in Ghana, outside the country, and all of that. The court has also indicated that the state should also prepare or process extradition. I mean, begin the extradition process to bring her to face justice, because you know that even though she's been sentenced, the sentence will start running when she touches
right
exactly and when she's arrested by the state, and that is where the sentence will start. And so all of these things, it has not taken effect. It will take effect when she comes down or the state arrests. So the judge said that the Attorney General's office should collaborate with international authorities to ensure that she that benefited the most should come and face justice.
So now the charge is on the AG office to facilitate her return into the country,
exactly,
where to serve her sentence,
and then also attach the property of Madam Sednam Atienu.
So who represented her in court today?
Well, so today it was I forgot, it escaped me,
right.
But there was a lawyer who represented the second accused person. Mm. But for Sednam Atienu, I couldn't see the lawyer. The lawyer was not there. But the lawyer was in court throughout the trial, but today it happened that she was not there.
Mm-hmm. All right, Rishi, thank you very much for the update.
But before you go, the judge had some strong words.
I'm very interested in the comments of the judge before I bring in Mr. Martin Pebu.
So the judge made certain allusion that if you see armed robbers who have AK-47, they come, they are not even able to take up to 1 million Ghana cedis. Mm-hmm. She said that in her years of practice, she has not learned that a robber has come to someone's house and has taken an amount to the tune of 1 million Ghana cedis. Mm. And here are professional armed robbers, people that are entire, they are knowledgeable, they've gone to school.
Sealing with a pen.
Exactly. So to Justice Ifeah Sewa Asaribuchi, such public officers should have mercy on the general public because people are going through hardship. In her words, if all of these monies had not gone down the drain, mm-hmm. perhaps we may not even go to the IMF after all.
Thank you very much for this update from the court this afternoon. It's a very interesting development, a call to death. So let's pick reaction to this matter. And of course, join us via Zoom with private legal practitioner Martin Pebu. Mr. Pebu, it's an honor to have you on the pause. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. My pleasure too.
Right. So I'm just going through, 78 counts of causing financial loss to the state, stealing, conspiracy to steal, money laundering, causing loss to public property in contravention of the public procurement law. And then that got her 10 years in imprisonment. Let me pick your initial reaction to this.
Well, and I said it's good. It's good finally the courts of justice have ground to the final destination. You know, they tell you that the wheels of justice grind slowly. But eventually, the wheels get to the destination. So it's heartwarming to see that at least we can claw back the money that we've lost, to those accused persons. Because, you see, these things must stop. They must. You say they must stop because we can't allow public officers to continue to fleece us upon all the benefits they get, then they steal again. And it's so nauseating. So it's good that justice has finally been served and we can get our money back. And I'll tell you personally, mm-hmm. in the course of cases like this, that for me, every 8 years, I change government too. Because all the politicians is the same. They are thieves in NDC, thieves in MPP. So it's only when we change that we can always get criminal prosecutions and then get back our money. The day we make a mistake and allow one side to overstay, then by the time you have done, all the evidence would have been white. So this is quite heartwarming. Of course, this is without prejudice to the right of the accused persons to go on appeal. They can go on appeal. But at least this one is a concluded judgment, so we can make comments on that. Yes.
I mean, listening to the things that came up in court, the evidence that were put forth by the prosecution, to the extent that there was this issue about 2 million Ghana cedis that, according to Maslow, went into public education, there was no evidence to back it. Some market women who were victims of the fire outbreak here in Accra, and not a single person could be provided in court to testify that she indeed received this amount or that amount. Clearly, someone will sit and say this was a naked robbery. Will you agree?
Absolutely. I mean, the little that I've read is so nauseating. You see that, like you said, naked robbery. Other words with that, this is childish. It's so childish, so amateurish. I was like, how? Like you said, naked robbery. It's so, come on, this guy. Sometimes I just ask God that, so what have we done? That's a problem. What have we done? That, look, you know, most of us are religious, whether Muslims, Christians, but for the past 8 months, I've been asking, I ask lawyers, friends, every day, that what have we done to God that we pray for good leaders, and every time we end up with bad boys and girls. We pray and pray. We've been praying since. We've been praying and praying, and yet these are the kind of leaders we end up with. Look, because let me tell you, Mr. Abrobi, you know that when you are in government as CEO, when you are in office as a CEO, look, some of these contracts, you didn't have opportunity to have them for yourself. Right. Not that what is happening is right too, but I just want to be practical. The picture I'm painting is that it's excessive greed that brings this kind of charges that we have. Excessive greed. We all know that in a developing country, sometimes it's hard. People will ask you that, hey, so can you keep signing contracts over 1,000 for strangers and then you don't get anything? So what I'm saying is that some of the contracts, look, it's a practice. You go to the various ministries. Sometimes the minister also has some of the contracts. They are his, but he will not sign with himself as the contractor. So he finds a friend or somebody, then they do it through another person. So you can see Bruby executing the contract, but really and truly, it's for the minister, right? Then he signs for other contractors. They all come to say thank you. So what I'm saying is that practically, these CEOs, ministers, they make millions. So when you go and then you are nakedly stealing this amateurish manner, this naked robbery, then I'm like, greed has no end. So this is good. It's a good reminder. And I'm sure those in government today, when they hear this, they should be preparing. December, when we kick out this NPP government, that's the same way next year. We expect that people who have been corrupt will be prosecuted, even including President Akufo-Addo. I keep saying that the immunity thing. Have you seen that Donald Trump is in court? The trial started yesterday, right?
Right.
That's the same way we'll be pushing that even President Akufo-Addo should be prosecuted for the corrupt deeds in his government. We have to do it that way. If we don't stand up, if we continue to be cowards, then the politicians will take everything.
That, now, I was going to be asking about the next steps that the Attorney General can take based on the court directive, that there should be way for the AG to initiate the move to get into the country to serve the prison sentence. But just a quick one on a comment that was passed by the judge before handing down the sentence, that public office holders should have mercy on the people, because even armed robbers who are holding AK-47, when they steal, they don't take that much. That to me is profound, isn't it?
Absolutely. That's the same thing we have been mourning. It's apt. Absolutely. You know, they've been saying it for ages that as for Ghana government money, yeah, the pen may be Ghana government money, yeah, the pen. So literate, educated people go into office, public office, and steal. That's what they've been saying. So, oh, Ghana, a bicycle, yeah, the pen. Yeah, the pen. So people go and sit in office and steal. So it's good. This is giving us an opportunity to discuss this matter over and over, because trust me, we have to continue discussing, because some people don't intend to repent. So it's when we keep repeating this, keep advocating, then perhaps it can scare them off. But if you just think that, a few, trials will end public looting, it won't. You remember, since we started in 92, remember after Jerry Rawlings' term, his 2 years term. So when the NPP took over, they tried Ibrahim Madam, the finance minister, what was his name? Yeah, and the others, George Sipayanke and Co.
And then yeah, Victor Salome,
all those people. So you thought, it will stop. You see, it's still ongoing. So we need to keep talking. We can't stop talking. We have to keep talking. Then hopefully, as we name and shame, some would stop. You know, in the current administration, you remember Cecily Abapa, the plenty money. And so, look, Mr. Abrobi, let's repeat this. Cecily Abapa's case that's gone to Yoko. You see, Mami Tiwa Adedankwa is quiet. She's not able to tell us whether she took the money from Cecily Abapa at the time the OSP handed over the money to her. We need Mami Tiwa Adedankwa to do that. Let us know. Because, you know, OSP handed over the millions to Cecily Abapa because OSP didn't have jurisdiction.
Yes.
So at the time Yoko was taking over the case, did they take the money from Cecily Abapa? Mami Tiwa should answer this for us. Did they take over that money? Did they take over that money? Because we can't sit down and allow Cecily Abapa to keep this money. No. So we need Yoko boss, Mami Tiwa, to come and answer. So by all means, let's continue the discussion, because if we don't, these politicians will loot us, both left and right. They are the same people, except that perhaps with hindsight, now when it comes to Corruption Perception Index, Democracy and Press Freedom, Mahama appears to have done better than Akufo-Addo. But
Mr. Bobo, the downside to all of this is that the person who has been sentenced to 10 years in jail is not even in the country to serve her sentence. What are the remedies available to the Attorney General's office? I mean, is it a case that we can initiate, an extradition process to get her into the country?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And as your colleague mentioned, that the judge has already made the orders that the AG should do so. Yeah, so they will fish her out. When the orders are done, they're asking for extradition. Part of it can be sent to Interpol. Mm. So wherever she is, they will get her. And in the meantime, hopefully she has some properties in Ghana. I hope with this she'll have properties in Ghana. So the Attorney General will go after the property. So they will do confiscation proceedings as well. They will confiscate. A lot of the time, they may not get everything back 100%. Mm. You remember the Yoko matter?
Right.
And so, you see, now the Attorney General is going to embark on confiscation of certain Tamar Close properties. We should know. The Yoko, Wayomi. Right. Where are we with Wayomi? You see that they tried to confiscate some of his assets, and then after a while, everything is gone.
The last time I spoke to the, this was just early this month, the Deputy Attorney General, Mr. Afrechan Yeboa, he told me that they've not been able to dispose of all the properties of Mr. Wayomi. In fact, they've not been able to recover all the money that the court asked the AG to do. So there are still some outstanding issues that they need to deal with.
Good. So that's good. But they should give us specifics. Let's have how much more have they recovered? What efforts have been made to sell? Let's have that. Let's have the conversation. Let's continue. Because those guys are tough-skinned. Criminals like that, they are tough-skinned. So you need to continue. We need to continue talking. We need to continue advocating to be able to get them to give us some decent briefing space in their public offices.
Right. So clearly, this is a win for the government. And how much of confidence does it give to the public that you cannot take state property and go scot-free?
Yes, it's a massive win. And I'm sure the public confidence in the judiciary at this moment will soar up a point or two, because people will be excited that, finally, though it's taking so long, but finally justice has been served. Yeah, we are all happy for it. Because, look, I tell you, you see your classmates, you see people who are next to nothing. They enter government and then suddenly they are buying chains of homes. East Legon, you find somebody buying 3-4 houses. I mean, contiguous. You're like, what work are you doing? Go to cantonments. You see ministers. You see why that matter of OSP should search all the ministers? You see why that case will never end? We should go on. We'll make complaints that, look, these ministers are corrupt in this regime. So go ahead and search all of them. You see how the search of Cecilia Dapa produced so much money. You think it's Dapa alone who has money in a house? You check the rest of the ministers. Why do you think we are suffering?
All right, thank you very much for your time this afternoon. Mr. Martin Pebu is a private legal practitioner, and that's his reaction to the case that finality was brought on. The former Maslock CEO, Sedina Tamaklo, sentenced to 10 years with hard labor. And that is the breaking news this afternoon here on Joy News. And of course, we have more reaction coming your way. This is The Pulse with me, Elton Brobe, here on Joy News. Now, let's stay a little longer on legal matters, because the case has been brought before the International Court of Justice in The Hague, aiming to end Germany's ongoing support for Israel, claiming it violates the Genocide Convention. The outcome is likely to be historic. DW correspondent Thomas Pyro joins us live from Berlin with more. Let's do this quickly before we do some local issues. So, Spiro, who brought this case to the court and why?
This case has been brought to the court by Nicaragua, out of all countries, a Central American country, essentially accusing Germany of enabling or facilitating genocide and breaches to international humanitarian law by supporting Israel in particular militarily, but also by temporarily halting its support to the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, Nicaragua, stressing that with that support, Germany is essentially complicit. And what Nicaragua specifically wants by bringing this case to the court is for a decision to be made so that Germany stops delivering weapons to Israel. If you look at weapons delivery to Israel, Germany is the second country that sends most weapons to Israel, with about 30% of arms support. Now, obviously, this has been rejected by Germany, but it is a case that clearly reveals that the view here in Europe of what is happening in Gaza is one that is very different to how it's seen in other parts of the world, not only in Central America or Latin America, but also in Africa or in Asia.
So what has been Germany's reaction to this matter?
Germany clearly distanced itself from those accusations, stressing that Nicaragua's view is one-sided, that the case presented before the court by Nicaragua does not have substantial evidence. Germany has also defended its support of Israel, but by saying that essentially Israel's security is at the core of Germany's foreign policy. This has to do, obviously, with Germany's history. In fact, here in the country, it's described as being something absolutely vital to the state. Staatsräson is the word that's used here in Germany to describe Germany's support to Israel. But this is something that not only now with this particular case, but since the war began, has been central to Germany's position, but also central to the criticism that Germany has received for its support towards Israel. So Germany has clearly distanced itself from Nicaragua's case. At the same time, Germany is aware that its position when it comes to what is happening in Gaza is one that is receiving criticism not only here among segments of the population, but also from other parts of the world.
So when is an outcome expected, and how historic could this be?
It has been said that a preliminary decision can be expected in a matter of weeks, but the whole discussion about support towards Israel, political and military support towards Israel, the whole discussion about how not only Germany but different regions and countries in the world view that support either towards Israel or towards Palestinian communities is one that will most probably continue. It is absolutely clear from Germany but also from other European countries that the view that many hold here in this country is not a view that is necessarily the same in other parts of the world, from African countries, Latin American countries, Asian countries. So as such, when, let's say, German diplomats travel around the world defending their support of Israel, defending the fact that they send weapons to Israel, defending their decisions regarding the UN Agency for Palestinian Refugees, that at the same time they have counterparts in other parts of the world that do not necessarily view this in the same way. So when it comes to actually discussing possible solutions to what is happening in Gaza, it is clear from the German perspective that some of those other views have to be included as well in the overall debate.
Well, thank you very much, Spiro, for that update from Germany. And he is with our partners, DWTV. Now let's talk about energy. Let's reverse to energy, because the Liquefied Petroleum Gas Marketing Companies Association of Ghana is kicking against the imposition of an $80 per metric ton tax on liquefied petroleum gas. In a letter signed by Malam Bukhari Amadu, the association's chairman, and addressed to the National Petroleum Authority, they condemn what they deem as the NPA's abuse of regulatory loopholes. So why are the LPG marketers opposed to this? In the studio with me, we'll have Gabriel Kumi, is vice chair of the Liquefied Petroleum Gas Marketing Company. Mr. Kumi, it's good to see you here on us.
Good to see you, my brother. How are you?
I'm good. And so why are you against this decision, if I may ask, so that we can set the foundation to look at the implications?
I mean, the reasons are obvious. I'm sure you, Elvin, think that you are against any imposition of taxes on LPG. Because this is a product government has set an objective to increase its consumption. LPG, of all the petroleum products, LPG is the only product that cabinet in 2019 single LPG PG out and said that, look, Ghanaians, we want you to double consumption of LPG within the next 10 years. We were then at 5% penetration level as at 2019-2020. Government said he wants us to reach 50% penetration by the year 2030. But government at the same time goes behind and slap taxes and levies on the product, raising the pump price to the height that the ordinary Ghanaian is no longer be able to afford. You can't eat your cake and have it. You can't set such a laudable objective to increase consumption of LPG and at the same time you increase the price of the product through the back door, through taxation and levies. LPG is a product with a highly elastic demand. Any single peso that you add onto the price of LPG will go a long way to reduce its consumption.
His karate lessons might not turn him into a black belt.
Hi-ya!
And even after band camp, he might not be the greatest musician. But with the 3% annual percentage yield you can earn on a PenFed Premium Online Savings Account, your goal of supporting his dreams...
Thanks for everything, Mom and Dad.
...will always be worth it. Apply today at PenFed.org/savings. Federally insured by NCUA. $5 minimum to open account. To receive any advertised product, you must become a member of PenFed.
PenFed's got great rates for everyone.
At Nutrafol, we don't just help your hair, we help your body grow it. Because it's never just about your hair. It can be your job, or your deodorant, or your lunch, or just normal life. That's why our whole body approach targets the key root causes of hair thinning. Discover your root causes and why we're the number one dermatologist recommended hair growth supplement brand at Nutrafol.com. That's Nutrafol.com. These statements have not been approved by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease paid for by Nutraceutical Wellness, Inc.
The statistics shows that from 2020, 2021, when we hit the peak of consumption, LPG consumption since then has taken a nosedive. We are in a decline. So we were shocked to see on the 1st of April that government has gone ahead to slap the highest tax ever, the highest single tax ever to be slapped on LPG has been slapped on the product on the 1st of April.
So this, Mr. Kumi, this $80. I mean, what explanation is the MPA offering, justifying why this should be on?
Yes, you know, for some time now, the government has been trying to implement cylinder recirculation model since 2019. But you know, these are some of the attitudes that have really stalled the implementation of this policy. Government has not been successful at implementing this policy. Now, what government is saying is that it wants to impose those levy on Ghanaians. Use those levy to support companies, private companies, to set up bottling plants and to invest in cylinders in order to implement cylinder recirculation policy. I mean, the legality of that may even have to be tested. You can't just the ordinary Ghanaian, the ordinary poor Ghanaian, and use those funds to support well-established companies who wants to invest in cylinder recirculation. And talking to some of these companies that MPA is purporting to support with this fund, they are even against their name being used to collect these funds. I've spoken to some BDCs. These are very well-established, respected companies who, even if they want to expand the operations and enter into cylinder recirculation, can just go to the capital market and seek support in the form of loans from the banks and use that to set up their bottling plants and to invest in cylinders. Why must government collect taxes from the ordinary Ghanaian and use it to support these well-established, highly respected companies
to do that? But for you as Marketers Association, how would that affect you? Because my thinking is that eventually the cost will be passed on to the consumer. So let's start from your point of view. How does that affect you as marketers? And how does it trickle down to the consumer?
Great. LPG basically runs on volumes. The more you are able to buy, the more you are able to supply as a company. So the continuous imposition of taxes, which raises the price of the product, which is pushing consumers away from consuming the product, will mean that the survival of LPG companies, marketing companies, is in great danger. And indeed, most of our members are living on the edge. Some of them are collapsing. Some of them have started laying off workers because they are not able to make enough volumes to be able to sustain that level of employment. You know, and the LPG industry downstream is one of the few, very, very, very few Ghanaian-owned industries we have in this country.
Right.
In Ghana now, even Bayayachi and Kenewele and Bobe are being taken over by the Chinese. All the industries, even retail industries, have been taken over by foreigners.
Mm.
The LPG industry have been built and maintained over the past 25 to 30 years by indigenous Ghanaians. So this is an industry that we expect government to come up with policies to protect, because it's 100% Ghanaian owned. But rather we see government...
Yes, please
Martin,
go on.
Are you there?
Yes, I'm still with you. Please go on.
Yes, but on the contrary, we see government taking certain actions which is really, really fighting against the survival of the LPG industry in Ghana. So we have, for the past 6-7 years, we have consistently and persistently said that all taxes on LPG must go, because we believe LPG must be made tax-free.
Mm.
This is a product that serious countries like Cote d'Ivoire are indeed subsidizing LPG. But in Ghana, with the imposition of this new tax, you will be paying more than 20% tax on the LPG. And this is a product that government intends to promote its usage. And you know, this is a mass product. This is a product that is used by the ordinary Ghanaian. So it's highly price elastic. So once you keep pushing taxes on it, you are indirectly telling Ghanaians that they should stop using the LPG and go to the bush and cut firewood and use charcoal for cooking. And indeed, this morning I cited a report from IES, Institute of Energy Security, a very credible institution which has really come out with a survey that really suggests, that really give credence to the argument that we've always made.
Yes, the patronage is going down.
Yes, patronage is going down. I mean, we peaked at 2020-2021. Since then, we are just going down like that. Now, LPG is what imports. Go to any LPG filling station close to you and stand there. We have done a survey that suggests that over 60% of consumers that walk into any LPG station in the Accra, Tema metropolitan area are not able to fill their cylinders, because the product's price has shot so high. Now, your ordinary household cylinder, that is the 14.5 kg, is going to cost the consumer about 240 cedis.
Yes.
We live in a country where the ordinary Ghanaian is taking about 1,000 cedis, 800 cedis home. You expect such a person to use 25-20% of his income to buy just LPG? And we are going ahead slapping taxes on the product?
So, Mr. Kumi, clearly, I mean, your businesses are at stake, jobs are at stake. The purpose for which this whole LPG, you know, revolution came into the country is also at stake. You've written to the MP. I'm wondering whether you've gotten any response to deal with the way forward.
We are waiting patiently for a response from MPA. We know MPA is supposed to be a very listening institution. We expect that MPA will respond positively to this letter that we've written. We have distributed this letter to anybody and everybody that matters in this country. We expect all of them to speak to MPA to take out these taxes. You can't justify this. Nobody, no well-meaning Ghanaian who really mean well for this country will try and justify the imposition of such a huge tax on LPG.
Right. And finally, before I let you go, we understand that the next pricing window, petrol and diesel, are likely to go up between 4% and 5%. I don't know whether same may apply to LPG.
LPG is likely to go up slightly or be stable in price, but the next window beginning 1st of May we expect price of LPG to shoot up again. Now, the kilo of LPG is costing at the pump. The cost of a kilo of LPG is 16 Ghana cedis. Okay, so it used to be last pricing window, we were selling it at 14 cedis. But the imposition of this tax on 1st of April shot it up to about 15 cedis, 20 pesos. Mm. But unfortunately, over the last previous window, the cedi also depreciated, which put an additional 1 cedi on the product. Mm. And you know what is so dangerous about this tax is that it's dollar denominated.
Right.
What that means is that anytime your cedi depreciates, you are going to pay more. So now we are at 1 cedi, the tax is 1 cedi 20 pesos on the product. If tomorrow or next week or next month, the cedi to the dollar rate is about 14 cedis to the dollar.
Mm.
If the cedi should move to 15 cedis to the dollar, you are going to pay more. It means you are going to pay about 1 cedi 35 pesos for this tax. So it's not even a specific tax that you say, okay, this is 1 cedi and that's what we are going to pay. As the city weakens, we are going to pay more. Okay. And we are all very much aware of what is happening to our city. It continues to depreciate. We are not able to stabilize it. And that is what makes this task even more dangerous.
All right. Mr. Gabriel Kumeh, thank you very much for your time. We're hoping that the MPA will reach out and that there could be some resolution that benefits everybody going forward.
I have no option than to accept this plea from the marketers and take out this tax from LPG. So that, you know, the consequences of not consuming LPG is so huge. Look at our environment. Ghana's forest is one of the fastest depleting in West Africa.
Mm.
Galamsey has destroyed our forest. The few forests remaining, we are cutting the trees down for firewood and for charcoal. LPG is a product that we can use to save our forests and to protect our environment and to save our nation for future generations.
All right. Thank you very much. Gabriel Kumeh is the president of the LPG Marketers Association. And the news this afternoon is that the MPA has written to them imposing some taxes on, you know, LPG products. And the bottom line is that if this is made to stand, you will pay more for gas if you should go to the gas station to fill your cylinder, and that is what they are kicking against. They've written to the MPA asking for some conversation around it with the aim of withdrawing this task, but it doesn't look like there is a headway as of now. You're still watching The Pulse here on Joy News. Let's do some politics now. The National Democratic Congress has taken a swipe at President Akufo-Addo for his decision to rename the Ameri power plant. The power plant was procured in 2015 under the build, own, operate, and transfer arrangement to produce a total of 250 megawatts of power to shore up Ghana's energy generation capacity. The NDC says the decision to rename and relocate the plant to Angomaso in the Ashanti region is unrealistic and costly. Abbas Nuruddin is the Ashanti Regional Communication Officer of the NDC.
The Akufo-Addo and Bawumia government, having failed in all their endeavors to bastardize the Ameri deal engineered by the visionary and nation builder John Mahama to end the age-old doomsaw, they are now seeking to obliterate John Mahama's enduring legacy in the energy sector. And one of such moves is the scheduled recommissioning and renaming of the Ameri power plant on Wednesday, 17th April 2024, at Angomaso in the Oforikuru municipality in the Ashanti region. The questions many people are asking are, why will the Akufo-Addo-Bawumia government waste scarce resources to recommission a power plant that has already been commissioned in 2015? Why is the Akufo-Addo government seeking to change the name of the power plant from Ameri to K1TPP? How does the mere recommissioning and renaming of the power plant from Ameri to K1TPP help resolve the financial crisis that is the main cause of the doomsaw Ghanaians are presently experiencing? How on earth does the mere relocation of the Ameri power plant from Abuaze in the western region to Kumasi cost $35 million, which is over three times more the amount Otumfuo Osei-Tutu is soliciting to renovate the Komfo-Anokye Teaching Hospital. The more questions we ask, the more confused we become as to the true intentions of this clueless and incompetent Akufo-Addo government. Need we say that the Akufo-Addo Bawumia government, having borrowed so much with very little to show, is seeking to rebrand and take credit for most of the projects initiated by the visionary John Dramani Mahama just to create a false sense of performance in the minds of the people? They started with the Kumasi Airport Phase 2 project, which is one of President Mahama's towering achievements in Ashanti region, and now the renaming of the Ameri power plant to K1TPP. But let it be known that when Dumso was collapsing the businesses of the inhabitants of the Ashanti region and beyond, it was John Mahama's Ameri power plant, howsoever it is called, that was brought in to save the situation.
All right, so that's the NDC. And remember that the commissioning and inauguration of this power plant is tomorrow, and we'll have more for you when that is done by President Akufo-Addo and the Energy Minister. But building your dream home among several other projects for various reasons can be financially draining. And yet the pressure to cut costs in construction has necessitated the need for the consideration of several technologies, which to many are cheaper than a normal block and mortar option. Hydroform technology is one among the many options of construction. And in the studio this afternoon is an expert, is an expert in that technology who will be sharing with us all we need to know and how we can take advantage of that technology as we plan to put up that project this year. Samuel Kofi Abunyega is head of business development and quality control, Point of Light Construction Incorporated. Samuel, welcome to the
program. Thank you.
So, I mean, we've been used to either
the regular sand.
Yes, of course.
Yeah.
Cement and sand.
Yes, yes.
Or sometimes bricks.
Yes.
But you have a different approach.
Yes, this is also bricks in a form, mm-hmm. but this is called Hydroform.
All right.
It's actually originated from South Africa, mm-hmm. and we use a machine which is called Hydroform technology machine to mold the blocks. Now, these blocks are not the regular sandcrete block that you know. We use Litrite, mm-hmm. and then we use normal cement, mm-hmm. to mix it. Then when the blocks are formed, in fact, the Litrite must be tested to be known that if it's good for that particular purpose, mm-hmm. because you can't just use any Litrite at all.
Right.
So you have to test it. Then after testing it, then it goes through the process. You mold it. It goes through the curing process. Then you begin to interlock. So these blocks are interlocking blocks. They are cheaper. You don't use mortar to hold them at the time that you are building. Mm-hmm. So you cut down cost on more cement. You also cut down cost on things like iron rods, especially when you are not doing high-rise building,
okay,
and you are doing normal short structures. You can. We have a technology called interlocking pillars that we can eliminate the iron rods and then use our interlocking pillars to form like a pillar, which will even give you more lasting life on the structure than using an iron rod, mm-hmm. because the iron rod, they have their expiry
right
time, mm-hmm. but this one can take you about 80 years, 100 years, and it'll still be intact.
I want us to look at the cost analysis between what we are used to, the new technology, and how your technology stands out.
Yeah, so the cost, depending on the kind of structure you are putting up, I always say that when it comes to the skeleton of the structure, as in the block works and all that, you cut down a lot of cost. But your cost will only increase when you are doing a lot of luxurious fittings. Because, for instance, I can use maybe 25,000 or 30,000 to do the skeleton of the structure for you. But now, what kind of tiles are you opting for?
Right.
What kind of glaze works are you looking for? Mm-hmm. These are the things that will bring the cost variance. Other than that, Hydroform is about 40%, 30% cheaper than the regular sandcrete.
40% cheaper.
Don't forget that you are eliminating more cement for mortar works. Mm-hmm. Every concrete block that you lay, you use mortar. Mm-hmm. You put it down, you set the blocks on it, you chalk the blocks with mortar to hold exactly. the mezzanine. After you plaster in and out. But hydroform is not like that. You can choose to plaster the inside or leave it as it is. Mm-hmm. Then you dress the entire building and then you spray it.
And you say that if you are not doing a high rise building, you don't even require
iron rod. You require iron rod at the base for the foundation. Mm-hmm. Normally we use the normal concrete blocks, 6-inch blocks to do the foundation. Then after when we are done with the floor works, then we use the hydroform technology to raise the structure up.
All right. So are there evidence of some of these structures already?
Yes. Some of them are scrolling on the screen. Mm. Then we've done across the country.
And
so it's good for social projects like okay. school buildings. It's even cheaper to build with. For example, we assisted Multimedia to put up a school with that technology in the central region. And then we have also church buildings. These are cheap to build.
What about for human accommodation?
We can do anything. Mm-hmm. So anything that you want to build, the only thing is let's have your plan. Mm-hmm. Then we will do the costing for you. Then also we'll come and look at your site. Then we'll see where we can get the light right. Because mm-hmm. that's the first important thing.
Without it, it will be impossible.
No, without the light right, we can't build for you because we use light right.
Right.
So if we're able to get good source of some, there is some cases where I've done structures where I got the light rights right on the person's land. Mm. So that's another cost saved, isn't it? Because right. if you're hauling it from somewhere, you could pay about 1,500, 2,000 per truck. Mm-hmm. But this time, it's right on your land. So we use it.
So it's possible there are places you may not find it?
Yeah. In some cases, you have to bring it from afar. Mm-hmm. But even the cost will not be so much felt than using the regular concrete.
But regardless of wherever you are in Ghana
it's everywhere. Lightrite is everywhere, but just that it's the quality that differs. Mm-hmm. So like I said, we test the lightrite. So as an expert, when we test it, the quality of the lightrite that I get will tell me the amount of cement I should use to mix the lightrite and produce a block mm-hmm. for you to last for about 100 years or
all right.
to produce a block that can withstand every harsh weather condition.
But apart from the financial cost, which is an advantage, what else would
this
you gain
fireproof. By? This is fireproof. The technology is fireproof. It is earthquake resistant. And then it's bulletproof. Mm-hmm. So these are some of the benefits. Yes, bulletproof. Bullet cannot go because the block is 9-inch broader. Okay. So there's no penetration. You can't. The bullet cannot go through.
No, I was already asked, once you bring in that, once you introduce the bulletproof, the impression that then it will be expensive.
It's not. That is what people think when they see it because it's not common. The only reason why you hardly see it around is that Ghanaians are a bit more young fans. Let's keep doing the normal mm-hmm. one. We know what if this happens. But when you get the expert hands, we'll give you all the necessary guidance, give you all the necessary information, so that we can give you the quality of the structure that you want that can last for more than 100 years.
So for the bulletproof, is because the structure is fortified.
Exactly.
That is how it can be difficult for that penetration to take place.
Exactly. And then for the fireproof, because the lightrite is highly compressed with cement content in it, it doesn't burn.
So in case of fire,
fire, anything in the house that can fuel fire will burn. But the structure will still remain intact.
And you can still use it?
Unlike a regular concrete that with fire intensity of about maybe 20, 30, 1 hour, you have to bring down the structure and then rebuild again. But this is not like that. Mm.
So since we started rolling this out, what has been the patronage?
Oh, it's going well. People that they don't know much about the Enquirer, we tell them, some of them, due to financial issues, they take their time. So we have flexible way of putting up structures for you, especially when it comes to the group, maybe associations, maybe they have some land somewhere.
Okay.
You can come to the office, we'll sit down with you, do payment structure arrangements.
I just want you to take us through the process.
Yes, and then BOTs.
What must I have?
Okay.
And what will be the process before I see the building take off?
Okay, so now when you come to our office, the first thing that we inquire is your land. We don't provide land for anybody. You have your own land, which is well documented. Then if you don't have a plan, we have an architect that can develop the plan for you at a fee. Mm. And then also we'll do the site inspection for you. And then we'll sit down. How financially well standing are you? Because mm-hmm. somebody will say, okay, you give me a budget of maybe 250,000 Ghana cedi, but I don't have it now. Okay, so now let's start with the base. So phase one, let's do the base and the production of the blocks. Mm. Then phase two, let's raise the structure. Phase three, let's do the roofing. Then at some point, maybe you can decide that you want to do your fittings. We can leave you to do your fittings, but we'll give you a supervisor that will help you, your masons and then your carpenters to do those necessary fittings for you. So it's very flexible.
But do you have people on standby who do the construction?
Yeah, I have a whole team.
Okay.
It's a whole team.
So in other case that you take the technology and go and recruit some mason somewhere and get a mason to do the work for you.
A normal mason cannot do it. Everybody that lays a block is somebody who has been trained to lay the block. So a normal regular mason cannot do it unless he's been trained. Mm-hmm. So you have to be trained. I can do the training for you, or better said, you have to go to South Africa for the training. Mm-hmm. It depends. In some cases, too, we also do BOTs for communities that do not have things like portable, modern, decent toilet facilities.
Build, operate, and transfer.
Exactly. For the DCs, the district assemblies, or maybe the townships. So maybe if the chiefs or the DC, we can set, you bring the land, we'll go into agreement, we'll give you 30% of the revenue, we'll keep 70%, maybe for about 10 years, 5 years, depending on how commercially viable the place is. Mm. If the place is very commercially viable, then it can be very short. Maybe 5 years square, we can just finish the investment money, then we hand over the structure for you. So we can also do accommodation for government workers on short stay purposes with the district assembly. So we can build maybe about 10 chamber and hall apartments for the government workers there.
And have you suggested this to the authorities?
Yeah, we are still in communication with.
And you are hoping that maybe they'll buy into this.
Yeah, exactly.
As well. So, I mean, before I let you go, what will be your final words and where can you relocate it?
Oh, you can. My office is at Adenta, close to the Focus Hospital. And then also we have the emails and then have the contact numbers that you can contact us on. So, personally like this, can call me on 0244.
Right, all right, so please go on with the contact.
Yeah, 0244 49 19 19. And then I have 0244 17 92 48. So, again, you call any of these numbers.
Again, if you can go over the
okay, the so numbers. The numbers are 0244 49 19 19. Then I have 0244 17 92 48.
And the location again?
Adenta Focus Hospital.
All right. Thank you very much, Simon, for coming through. It's about a new way of building, and that's what you need to understand from this point on. This is the pause. We'll take a short break. We shall be back.
Uncertainty. Some of the parents speak. Hey, is it?
If this is Connect Africa with me, Blessed Sugan, welcome to our program. We have updates on the elections taking place in Sierra Leone.
There had been some attack around the opposition's office, and this was because they prematurely announced results, which both parties technically did.
And what is the cost of political unrest in the West Africa sub-region?
The preponderance of illicit activities resulting from easy access to small arms is causing a lot of havoc across the region.
Five countries, how are you going to work with them?
It is one of the few cases where we have the countries themselves agreeing to do it and calling on ECOWAS to act on their behalf.
There is a DNA testing, the process of DNA of 17 students who were banned beyond recognition. So at the moment, there is some uncertainty. Some of the parents think, hey, is my kid part of those that were banned beyond recognition, the 17?
Every human being has a right to a livable world. And to secure that livable world, all the rich nations and all the international financial organizations must transform the standard.
Of course, this is your election headquarters, so let's do some politics. The flag bearer of the National Democratic Congress, John Dramani Mahama, says his experience in and out of office as president will make him a better president if re-elected. Though proud of his achievement in office, Mr. Mahama says his time out of power has offered him an opportunity to reflect on his performance. He was speaking at Kambiata in the Northeast region as he wraps up his Building Ghana tour.
I've been president before, and I had
had the experience. There's no school where you go and pay school fees and enroll and say, I want to learn how to be president. You have to learn on the job. Luckily for me, I got the experience working with a very good, honest, one of the best presidents we've had in Ghana, Professor John Evans Atta Mills. And so as president, we did some things well. We did a lot of infrastructure. We provided health facilities in many districts and regions. We provided educational facilities. In the 8 years when Prof and myself were in government, we removed more than 3,000 schools under trees. We built more than 4,000 CHIPS compounds. We built roads and highways. We provided water to people. I had the privilege of commissioning the Bunkurugu water system. We extended electricity to as many communities as possible. If communities have light today, and Ghana has one of the highest rates of access to electricity, then it is thanks to the NDC administration. But on reflection, I've been out of office for 8 years. It gives me the opportunity to look back and look at some of the things that we could have done better. And not everybody gets that opportunity. That you become president, you go out of office, and you get the opportunity to come back again. And so I know that in the 4 years coming, I will be a much better president than even the first time when I was president. One, because of the experience that I've been president before, and two, because I have had the opportunity to reflect on my period of time as president.
And of course, we'll stay on developments. Now let me take you to the Ashanti region, because the 120-bed capacity Central Kumo District Hospital in the region has been finally opened for the public use after 10-year wait. Residents are excited. They can now access healthcare at the facility after contractors NMS Infrastructure Limited handed it over to the health authorities. Wahimin Teria reports all departments, beginning first with the maternity unit and administration, will start operations ahead of the official commissioning.
Construction works on the 120-bed capacity Sector Kumamoto District Hospital, a 10-year project, started in 2014. Despite the project suffering undue delays due to funding constraints and revariations that altered construction schedules, contractors delivered a world-class standard health facility. NMS Infrastructure Limited was involved in the design, construction and equipping of the new hospital, which will serve Ashanti Mampong, Nsuta, Biposo, Pamai and its environs, as well as the Afram Place, Kumawu and Efijasi areas. Deputy Director of Health Services in charge of administration, Ashanti, Micah Asabediako, announced all departments at the old polyclinic will be transferred to the new facility at the end of next month.
Tomorrow, the hospital administration, the maternity wing of the polyclinic, they are moving in to start operations. And we've given ourselves up to the end of next month so that all the units at the old polyclinic would have moved in to this place.
My Monday's handover ceremony marks the end of several years of waiting by residents of Sechirukumbewu and its environs, who until now were forced to access healthcare from an improvised polyclinic. It comes as health authorities battle the maternal mortality rate, which stands at 125 per 100,000 live births. Here is an elated medical superintendent of the
Fargo, the new virtual assistant from Wells Fargo, makes banking faster and easier. Like this.
Fargo, what's my checking account routing number?
And this.
Fargo, turn off my debit card.
And this.
Fargo, what did I spend on groceries last month?
And that's just the beginning. Do you Fargo? You can. In the Wells Fargo mobile app. Learn more at wellsfargo.com/getFargo.
Terms and conditions apply. Your mobile carrier's availability and message and data rates may apply. Wells Fargo Bank NA, member FDIC.
O Polyclinic, Dr. Alice Agbanuhu says residents have likened the new district hospital to a hotel due to its state-of-the-art installations.
We've been looking forward to this for a very long time, and I'm happy that today all of us are seeing what we are seeing.
This is a wonderful environment. I mean,
people come here and they wonder, is it a hospital or a hotel? Well, it's a hospital, as I said. There's a fully-fledged herbal medicine unit. And then we also have... We have the medical unit, pediatric unit with incubators. We have a very nice emergency with ventilatory supports. We have dental units. The list goes on and on. Eye, wonderful equipment there and all. You go to the wards, there are monitors there to monitor patients. And a whole lot. I mean, you go to the theater, wonderful. The maternal mortality issues has not been too different from, what pertains nationally and even in the region. And because we did not have the necessary equipment, what happens, sometimes we do refer some of the cases that we don't have the capacity to manage. But I think with this new facility, with all the equipment that it has and the personnel that are coming in, so we'll be able to manage most of the cases.
Among those who have sighed a relief are the staff of the Infrastructure Directorate of the Ministry of Health. Their unrelenting efforts have paid off as the hospital is operationalized. Kwame Amponsan Safo is head of Capital Investment and Project Management Unit, Ministry of Health.
I'm full of relief, and I believe everybody, including my director, is full of relief. Why do I say so? At some point, we're even summoned to the Chief's Palace to, you know, answer questions as to why the project was not moving on. And so for it to have come to fruition today, it's all good news for us, and we are really happy that we have this project here. The specialness of the project starts from the planning, you understand, how you package the project. So as you know, this is a fully equipped 120-bed district hospital, and that is special in itself. I mean, you come in here, all the equipment that you need for proper healthcare are here.
Meanwhile, Director of NMS Infrastructure Limited, Stephen Bush, says his company is poised to deliver a more world-class health infrastructure projects in Ghana.
We hope to be involved continually in the health program here. The original idea was for her to be here for the long term, and that is still our commitment.
From Kumawu in the Ashanti region, for joining.